Our military spending dwarfs that of the rest of the world by a lot. Today, it's less the spending than the actual military activity that we'll focus on. How busy have we been? Well, the title of Chris Kelly's book says a lot. It is America Invades, how we've invaded or been militarily involved with almost every country on Earth. Christopher Kelly is a former television executive with a passion for military history. If you've ever admired the words on the bottom of a TV screen, you've probably been looking at a product of the Chiron Corporation, for which he was once board chair. Christopher's ancestors fought in many an American war. His secondary author, Stuart Laycock, worked in TV as well. Christopher, this really begins with another book Stuart Laycock wrote. Tell us about that.
Stu Laycock is my co-author, and he's English. And several years ago, his teenage son asked him the question, "Dad, how many countries have we," meaning Britain, "invaded?" And he, as a Cambridge-trained historian, was intrigued by that question, and he wrote a book called All the Countries We've Invaded, which was about how Britain invaded about 90% of all the countries in the world. And he went through every country from Afghanistan to Zimbabwe and discussed British military involvement in those countries. I read his book, and I reviewed it and found it fascinating. And as an American, I was curious to see how America would compare with Britain. And so together we wrote America Invades.
And what was your suspicion about what you'd find about America's involvement? Would it actually go above the 90% that the UK had?
Well, that's why we actually, for America, created two categories, because we are a younger country than Britain. We don't have as much history. We haven't invaded 90%. It works out to about 85 countries, or 44% of all the countries in the world, as listed by the UN, excluding the U.S. itself. And then in terms of invasions, and by invasions we mean Americans fighting abroad in a particular country. But we created a second category of military involvement as well. So there are countries like, for instance, Portugal. We haven't invaded Portugal, but we've had bases on the Azores since World War II, and they're still there to this day. So that was an example of a military involvement we have.
So you did decide a methodology to figure out where we've been active militarily. So what did the percentage come to? 44% invaded, and then how many?
So 44% invaded, and then when you add the military involvement into the equation, then it gets right up to 191 countries, almost all but three countries in the world that we've had some form of significant military involvement with. And the only three countries that we've missed entirely, according to our research, are Andorra, Bhutan, and Liechtenstein.
Really? That's it?
That's it. I've actually visited Liechtenstein, and I got a newspaper article about how America has not been to Liechtenstein in their local paper just this past summer.
So beyond the numbers, I mean, how did you choose which military episodes to feature in your book?
We go back to the beginning, and even before America was a country. I mean, what we classified as our first American invasion was actually in 1741, which is, of course, before the United States is a country in any sense. But at that time, there certainly were Americans. There were colonial Americans, and about 3,500 of them participated in an invasion of Colombia during the War of Jenkins' Ear, which was between Britain and Spain. And they were led by Admiral Edmund Vernon of the Royal Navy, whose nickname was Old Grog. And one of his one of the men who was serving was a gentleman by the name of Lawrence Washington, who was the older half-brother of George. And he named his home Mount Vernon in honor of his commander, in spite of the fact that the campaign was unsuccessful. They didn't capture Cartagena, which they tried to do. And when George Washington inherited the home from his brother, he retained the name. So there's a direct connection between Mount Vernon, the home of our first president, and the very first American invasion.
Wow, you found out a lot of neat stuff.
Yeah, it was fun to investigate. Obviously, they're the obvious ones. I mean, places like D-Day in France, and I mean, places that everybody knows about. But the way that we've been involved with a lot of countries that would come as much of a surprise to many people.
You say in America Invades, writing this book made me feel different about America. How?
Yeah, I think it challenged my perspective, I mean, politically and nationally, in terms of what I thought about our country. I mean, in undertaking the book, I mean, I think that, I mean, we tried not to be very hard to not be a political book, not to be a book that rants, you know, against certain presidents or against invasions in general, but just kind of tries to report the facts and let the readers make up their minds about whether they think this was a good idea or folly. Or a bit of both.
You say that writing about the recent past in particular risks the Bletchley effect. What's that?
Well, there I would say, I think that writing about the recent past is the trickiest part of history, because I think that history takes time, because it takes time for things like secrets to be disclosed, for memoirs to get written, and also for political partisan passions to cool and to gain perspective. And so I think it's the recent past, the last, say, 25 years, that are the hardest to write about. And the question is, whatever, you know, I write or anybody else writes about the last 25 years, you know, is it history or is it really journalism? I mean, I guess that's kind of the question.
Mm-hmm. So you're really not trying to come from a viewpoint in America Invades.
We're not an activist. We're trying to grind a particular axe. We're trying to, and also my co-author and I have, we actually have, you know, somewhat different politics. So I think that kind of sometimes forced us to meet in the middle on different issues. And I mean, some of the, you know, recent chapters are tricky ones. I mean, writing about Iraq and Afghanistan and Vietnam, all of those were, you know, difficult chapters to write, I'd say. But, you know, we tried to do our best to, you know, present the facts.
It is quite the encyclopedic book. I mean, that literally goes from A to Z. The book is called America Invades. Christopher Kelly is the author with Stuart Laycock. We'll come back and talk to Christopher Kelly after this break. On the way to the break, let me remind you, it is day 7 of the 8-day Spring Fund Drive here on Jefferson Public Radio. We're seeking your pledge of support. We just went on the way to $91,000 on our way to a $185,000 goal. So we're almost halfway there. We need to be a lot further along as we continue through the day. So keep those cards and letters coming in and actually make them electronic. IJPR.org and 888-552-6191. Some thanks on the way to the break. Becky and Jim Martin of Ashland, Bill and Pat Schooner of Ashland, Jennifer Whipple in Aetna, Todd Kemp in Ashland, thank you so much. Julia and Robert Jackman in Klamath Falls, appreciate it. Darren Ravasapur in Medford really loves to hear Barbara in the morning. Well, Greg Andrews and Eugene, appreciate your pledge. Jane Barton in Ashland, thank you for yours. IJPR.org and 888-552-6191 to continue supporting Jefferson Public Radio. Back on the Jefferson Exchange and America Invades in a minute. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Christopher Kelly, who is self-publishing his first book, America Invades, How We've Invaded or Been Militarily Involved with Almost Every Country on the Earth, written with British historian Stuart Laycock. It's a rather encyclopedic look at American involvement in all but three countries on the face of the planet. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about American military history and what it says about us as a people. They've tried very hard not to take a viewpoint in the book. You have the phone number here for your discussion points, 800-838-3760. And our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. There are three guys you focus on in the book, Chris Kelly: Ben Franklin, Charles Sumner, and Mark Twain. Why them in regards to military history?
Well, I think they're all kind of interesting Americans. And, you know, in our introduction, we talked about some of the ambivalent attitudes that Americans have had with regard to war. I mean, that we as a people are a country where many of us, for instance, many of the first Americans came from Europe and were fleeing the fact that Europe was a kind of a war-torn continent for many years. I mean, Europe, you think about Europe, it's had, you know, the 30 Years' War, the 100 Years' War, Napoleonic Wars, two world wars in the 20th century, and there were lots of immigrants from seeking refuge, many of whom were deeply religious. And so you have had this anti-war and pacifist strain throughout America from the very beginning of American history. And yet at the same time, America is a country that won its independence by fighting against Britain, by a, you know, violent revolution, and of course expanded its presence on the continent from 13 colonies westwards combat with the Native Americans, with the Mexicans, the English at various times. And so you have a nation that was founded by people who are deeply religious, often anti-war, but that a nation that's had to fight wars in order to become the nation that we are today.
So the book is organized like an encyclopedia with countries in alphabetical order. Does it just seem the easiest way to organize it?
And so like the three people you were talking about, like Sumner, mm-hmm. was, you know, a deeply, he, for instance, was a very anti-war politician. But then when it came to the Civil War, he was also very strongly pro-abolition. He ended up joining, you know, became a hawk. So he was the one who was actually was beaten in the floor of the Senate. So he was, you know, he was kind of a pacifist who got mugged, so to speak, and who, you know, discovered the virtues of prosecuting a war with in regard to the Civil War.
Beaten by a Southern sympathizer on the floor of the Senate. Yeah, amazing story.
That's right. I mean, he was actually nearly killed on the floor of the U.S. Senate. But in terms of the organization, your question, what we did is it took the same approach that Stu had taken, which was, you know, one chapter for every country, and so that we cover a lot of ground. And obviously, some, you know, chapters are bigger than others. I mean, we've had more involvement with France, for instance, than Zimbabwe. So, you know, we've got a much, you know, longer, more detailed chapter with France than Zimbabwe.
And gee, what should pop up first in the A's but Afghanistan? Oh boy.
Tough one to start with, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's remarkable that here we are. I mean, if you watched the Super Bowl this year, where you saw American troops being interviewed and, you know, who are watching the Super Bowl as well from Afghanistan, and you think that this is, I mean, we're in unprecedented historic waters where we have, I mean, it's been 15 years, it will be, since 9/11 this year. And you have kids, I mean, young men and women, I should say, who are serving in Afghanistan today, who were basically toddlers at the time of 9/11. That's a new thing in American military experience, I should say.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing when you put it that way. To think about kids who are entering kindergarten on September 11th are now fighting
right.
over there.
Exactly.
Why? Why does Afghanistan so often end up being labeled the graveyard of empires?
Well, of course, it was for the British. The British had numerous campaigns in Afghanistan, which were usually disastrous. I mean, the Russians, of course, invaded in the late 70s, and it was. I mean, for many, compare Afghanistan to being the Soviet Union's Vietnam experience, and with lots of casualties and a quagmire and so forth. And the way that, I mean, that we've been, of course, involved for, you know, coming up on 15 years this year, is kind of remarkable. And I mean, it's an extremely mountainous terrain, a people that has been used to fighting and retreating into the mountains, and, you know, for centuries.
There's an ominous saying about time in Afghanistan. Can you remember what that quote is?
Yes, I think it's, I mean, that you may have the watches, but we have the time. I think that's the way I...
Our enemies have the watches.
Enemies have the watches, but we have the time. I mean, the way that they just say, we'll wait you out, and that it doesn't matter how many years, decades it takes, we'll still be here when you guys are gone, is the thought, I believe, that's expressed.
You know, when we're talking to Christopher Kelly about his book, America Invades, how we've invaded or been militarily involved with almost every country on Earth, it quickly becomes clear in the A section of the book that we stay so busy militarily that we easily forget episodes that weren't that long ago. Albania, for example, in 1997. Why were we there?
In 87, well, I think that was related to the breakup of Yugoslavia and mm-hmm. And doing relief work in Albania in terms of the breakup of Yugoslavia, I believe, was the issue there. I mean, but even previously, we had been involved in during World War II in terms of helping the Albanians to liberate the country. We brought American bombers, for instance, were supporting Albanian partisans. And Tirana, for instance, is one of the only cities in World War II that was actually liberated by partisans as opposed to by, you know, armies of a foreign nation. So, but they did so with the assistance of the American air power at that time.
So you mentioned that there are only three countries we've never had anything to do with militarily, right. as we haven't invaded. There's never been a base there, et cetera. And those were Andorra, Bhutan, and Liechtenstein.
Right.
But you do point out Andorra ends up in here anyway. I mean, we still can monkey with the country's government, even if we're not there militarily, it sounds like.
We did still write, you know, chapters about, I mean, there was a funny story in the Andorra chapter about there was some American who actually tried to buy Andorra. I don't think he was successful, but, you know, he made a valiant effort. So, you have stories like that. Bhutan, we haven't invaded Bhutan, but a plane in World War II, a U.S. Army plane crashed in Bhutan in the mountains. I mean, but we didn't think that amounted to a significant military involvement. Is really more of an accident, but we have gotten around elsewhere, though, for sure.
Well, and that takes us into the bees, for example, in Bahrain, which turns out to be very important to American forces, which a lot of us might not be totally aware of. What do we have there?
The U.S. Sixth Fleet has had bases in Bahrain for a number of years and had involvement with that. We've done, of course, they're in the Persian Gulf, and it's the home to the Fifth Fleet. And so you've got you've had kind of a longstanding involvement with the U.S. Navy in Bahrain.
And it appears our original entry there was due to a British departure, which raises the question that Stuart Laycock certainly would have had a good handle on, which is how often around the world has the United States been the occupying? I'll use that word a little more carefully. The advisory force, anyway, that shows up when the Brits have left.
Well, that's an interesting point, and you alluded to that earlier, too, the way that, I mean, here our mother country, Britain, I mean, has invaded 90% of the world, and then America, kind of following in its footsteps, has gotten involved around the world, and in many cases took over the imperial reins when Britain retreated after World War II. So that certainly is the case, and actually in our progression, I mean, so you think about, I mean, Britain was the empire on which the sun never set. America is the superpower, I think the unquestioned, you know, greatest military power in the world today. And then actually our latest book that Stuart and I just came out with this fall is called Italy Invades, How Italians Conquered the World, going back to the grandfather of all empires with the Romans and including Italians as well.
Wow, and is that a somewhat shorter book than America Invades, or
it's a little less, and there again, the Romans of course got around the Mediterranean. They invaded, I mean, they were fighting in Iraq 2,000 years ago. They invaded Britain up to and built Hadrian's Wall in Britain, but basically, or just in terms of the numbers, they about a quarter of all the countries in the world were either invaded by Rome or by some kind of Italian force through the course of history.
Wow, that's one of the things that makes these books so fascinating is the fact that these empires really have extended themselves far and wide. Christopher Kelly's latest book with Stuart Laycock is called America Invades, How We've Invaded or Been Militarily Involved with Almost Every Country on the Earth. It doesn't come from a political viewpoint. It's more of a historical survey. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your thoughts and stories or questions for Christopher. 800-838-3760 on the phone. Emails go to jx@jeffnet.org. While we're still in the bees, we get to Bolivia, which is a good entry into Latin American activities. I mean, it sounds like we changed and supported or helped overthrow many leaders in Latin America over the years.
Well, we have definitely been involved. I mean, you go back to the Monroe Doctrine, which basically said Europeans stay out of Central and South America. And then that went to the Roosevelt Corollary, which, you know, went further than the Monroe Doctrine and said that, well, not only should the Europeans stay out, but we have a right to go in, and asserted that right. And then to kind of a retreat back from that, which really didn't take place almost until the 1920s. I mean, Herbert Hoover, who started to pull forces back from places like Haiti and the Dominican Republic and Nicaragua and different places, so... So yeah, there's been a long history of involvement, of course, and I mean in economic involvement in those areas with, you know, the banana companies and so forth, to the fruit businesses, to military, sending the Marines into all kinds of trouble spots to intervene on behalf of, you know, American interests.
Chris, did it make it a little cleaner and easier for you to begin the analysis essentially at the national border of the country in question? Because it seems like you could have easily backtracked to the political stuff that led up to
right.
any military stuff, and it sounds like you largely left that out.
right? I mean, we used, I mean, for, you know, for just for kind of purpose of the book, we used modern geography. So, like, when we talk about Colombia, I mean, obviously it wasn't Colombia back in 1741, but, you know, we had to, I mean, it's much easier for a reader to grasp, and because political borders shift a lot, too. I mean, that you have, I mean, geography has shifted a lot in the, over the time period that we're talking. So, for simplicity, we used, you know, modern borders, and then we you know, looked at kind of America, America's involvement throughout the world.
There's a cycle I noticed you cited in some of your online entries about something you call OPAD, O-P-A-D, overconfident, painful lessons, adjustments, and decisive victory. Is that a pretty frequent American cycle?
That's right. I mean, this is kind of my own coinage. I mean, there is something called the OODA loop, which was described by John Boyd of observe, orient, decide, act, which is describing how, you know, jet fighters and pilots fight. And also it really applies to almost any competitive endeavor. It's been used to apply to, you know, how to improve your golf swing, for example. So there's the OODA loop, which I was kind of taking off on, and then the OPAD loop, I look at American history, and here the O stands for overconfident, which we typically are, you know, especially prior to a military conflict. P stands for painful lessons, which we often learn in the course of a conflict. A stands for adjustments that we make as a result of those painful lessons. And D stands for decisive victory. I mean, that in the end, typically, we have in the past prevailed in a decisive way in the wars that we've gotten into. And now that is not necessarily true in the last 15 years. And, of course, the question is, you know, is the OPAD loop broken, so to speak? But when you go from the decisive victory, why it's a loop is that tends to create the overconfidence that started you out in the first place.
Okay, so we tended to go in thinking this is, well, it sounds like a lot of wars get that way. I remember reading about World War I a few times recently that people thought it would be over in a couple of months.
Sure, sure. Or, I mean, the Jefferson Exchange. I mean, Thomas Jefferson famously said at the start of the War of 1812 that the conquest of Canada would be a mere matter of marching. And, you know, that was a serious underestimation of the difficulties involved. And so, there have been lots of you know, examples of kind of overconfidence, if you will. The Secretary of the Navy during World War II said that defeating Japan would take no more than 3 months, for example. And, I mean, Custer said, I don't need any Gatling guns. They'll just slow me down before Little Bighorn. So, I mean, you have all kinds of examples of overconfidence.
Ah, sounds like Iraq and Dick Cheney talking about the dead enders who were just the last people hanging on.
Right. Or you know, referring to the ISIS as the JV team, too. I mean, could, you know, also fits into that mold as well.
Right. Okay. We have a call here from Ralph in Mendocino. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Christopher Kelly, the co-author of America Invades.
Yes. Thank you very, very much. I'm quite interested in your topic. It seems, as a veteran myself, I discovered that apparently all veterans are viewed as defending America, protecting America. And it seems as though some of our wars are simply ones of exploitation dictated by certain economic interests, as was certainly the case in the case of Great Britain. And I note, would welcome a comment in relationship to our non-draft situation, where all servers in the military are, in a sense, volunteers and perhaps could be viewed as mercenaries, and the fact that there's no grounds further for conscientious objection. And I'll take your response on the air.
Okay. Thanks for that, Ralph. Appreciate it.
First of all, I'll say thank you for your service and for our country. And there certainly was a change, I mean, after Vietnam, when we went from a draft army to a volunteer army, and that radically changed the perception of the military in the United States and, modified. I mean, you had the enormous protests, obviously, during the Vietnam War that were, you know, in large part due to the draft. I mean, the fact that it affected every male over the age of 18, you know, within a certain age range. So, and that went away, and it was a reform that was done with the military. And, I mean, I don't know if I would call our army mercenaries. I don't, I mean... I don't know if they get paid enough to be called mercenaries. I don't think they would probably agree to that description. But certainly there was a fundamental change in the way that not only that were troops are retained and recruited, but also in the way that the media is handled as well. That came as a result of the experiences and the hard experiences in the Vietnam War.
Much tighter control on the media, you mean?
Absolutely. I mean, that you had, you know, a much looser grip on them during Vietnam, which, I mean, in afterwards, you had this phenomenon of the embedded reporter and this, you know, real attempt to control the media flow in terms of the news flow that in the kind of post-Vietnam era up to today.
Much more to talk about with Christopher Kelly. His book is America Invades, How We've Invaded or Been Militarily Involved with Almost Every Country on the Earth. We'll get back to Christopher and take more of your phone calls and emails when we come back after this coming break. Right now, on the way to the break, I want to remind you it is day 7 of the 8-day Spring Fund Drive here on Jefferson Public Radio. We're seeking support to keep programs like the Jefferson Exchange on the air. We need pledges of financial support and large amounts because we stand just short of $92,000 right now, almost halfway to $185,000. So about 35 hours left and about half the total left to raise. So we have to have a monster day today and a monster day tomorrow. When we're getting the pledges rolling in, we need them just a little bit faster at ijpr.org and at 888-552-6191. Thanks to Lynn Danner in North Bend for your pledge of support. Laughing Stock LLC, based in Bonanza, thank you to the Livingstons for that pledge. Steve and Susanna Sibalaki in Lakehead, another one from Lakehead today. Good to hear you. Hillary Best and Alan Tomaszewski in Ashland, thanks so much for your booster gift. Don Sheely in Redding, thank you. And Nancy Spencer in Ashland want to thank you as well. Many more people to thank. We want to be able to add you to the list. IJPR.org and 888-552-6191. Back on the Exchange with Christopher Kelly and America Invades in 1 minute. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Christopher Kelly. He is the co-author with British historian Stuart Laycock of the book America Invades, How We've Invaded or Been Militarily Involved with Almost Every Country on Earth. How complete is the list? Well, he could find three countries where there's been no military involvement or basing of any kind: Andorra, Bhutan, and Liechtenstein. That's it. The rest of the book is arranged as an encyclopedia in alphabetical order, and Andorra actually ends up in there anyway because of attempts to overthrow the leadership there. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with your comments, questions, and stories about American military action overseas. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I shouldn't have said overseas because now we're getting into the C section of the book, and I have to ask about Canada. The obvious question, have we invaded? And you answer, of course we have.
Yes, we have. And I actually have an ancestor who, actually two ancestors who were directly involved with invasions of Canada, one during the American Revolution and one who was at the Siege of Quebec. And I reproduce a photo of a letter from him, and his commanding officer was actually Benedict Arnold, who later, you know, became a traitor, of course, and went over to the British side. But it was his commanding officer at the time at the Siege of Quebec, and the letter is dated April 17, 1776. So, I mean, my ancestor is basically asking to go back home to New York, where maybe it might be a little warmer, I suppose. So one ancestor invaded Quebec during the American Revolution, and then the other ancestor was in charge of the New York militia, whose name was also Van Rensselaer, Stephen Van Rensselaer, during the War of 1812. And their main issue is that they didn't really want to cross the river into Canada because, as a militia, they perceived themselves to be defensive in nature and not offensive. And so, the invasion of Canada was, and as I mentioned earlier with Jefferson, it was not, of course, successful.
Yeah, the Van Rensselaer family, very well connected in New York. I was just reading yesterday, unrelated to this, about Alexander Hamilton having some dealings with the Van Rensselaer family involving slavery. That's why I was looking for it.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, no, certainly they were involved heavily in New York State and landowners and politicians and generals and various things.
But back to Canada and military action there.
Sure.
Then you also talk about Irish independence fighters in Canada.
there were these things called the Fenian Raiders, which is something that I hadn't really come across until I was researching the book. But after the Civil War, after the U.S. Civil War, you had a lot of soldiers, you know, when the demobilization after the war had ended, were trying to figure out what to do with their lives and were unemployed. And of course, some of these, a percentage of them, were of Irish descent. And many of them had been Irish immigrants, too. They had been born in Ireland and had come after the potato famine. And they had a grievance against Britain and British rule and over Ireland. And their plan was to liberate Ireland by invading Canada, you know, as kind of kooky as that might sound. But they launched a series of raids. There were about five of these after the Civil War, and some of them involved thousands of soldiers. Now, this did not necessarily, and I don't believe it did, have the involvement of the U.S. government, but there were Americans that were invading Canada at this time. And, I mean, they even went to the length of building a submarine that I believe sank somewhere in the Hudson that as well. So they were, you know, quite serious at the time in the Fenian Raiders. So, I mean, in a sense, it was you could call it a kind of a, you know, they were kind of a 19th century version of Al-Qaeda, I suppose, except that they were, you know, Irish Americans, which, of course, I have a connection to, too.
Was there an ultimate connection to the Irish Republican Army itself?
They actually did fight under the banner of the IRA. They were the first to fight under the banner of the IRA, even before, you know, I mean, the trouble. This is in the 19th century, but long before, you know, the Easter Rebellion and you know, open revolt in Ireland itself.
So you also talk about War Plan Red involving Canada. What was that?
Well, the military is always making contingency plans. So the War Plan Red was a contingency plan for the invasion of Canada. I mean, I suppose that, I mean, how would that have been implemented? Well, I suppose had Hitler succeeded in invading Britain and Britain had gone, you know, Nazi, was fascist, then, I mean, people might have worried about, okay, what's going on with Canada, I suppose. I mean, I don't know how to justify that, but I mean, it was a contingency plan developed by the military to confront the possibility of invading Canada.
Interesting. So let's skip ahead. We have been active in parts of Africa below the Sahara, which might be kind of surprising. Like where?
Well, that's a surprise. When I mentioned that, okay, Andorra, Bhutan, and Liechtenstein are the only three, by implication, it means that every country in Africa we've had some form of involvement with. And one of the things I think is somewhat surprising is that it really has been, a lot of it has been in the last 15 years or so, during the last two administrations, you've seen more American involvement in Africa than ever before in our history. And I think this is kind of an interesting point that you bring up, because this kind of militarization of Africa has been kind of a non-issue in the media. I mean, the media doesn't really pay much attention in general to that. And I'm not saying that this is a good thing or a bad thing, but the point is that it is something that's gone on, and it's something that has not, the pros and cons haven't really been, I think, thoroughly debated about, you know, I mean, having bases in Djibouti and drone bases and all of that. And is that, you know, something that, I mean, obviously, it's designed to fight terrorism and to protect, you know, oil shipments around the Cape and so forth. But it also has implications that, you know, I mean, for commitments to fighting in Africa that we have never, as a country, embraced previously in our history.
As much of a military history buff as you are, Chris, I mean, how much of what you put in America Invades surprised even you?
Well, there were a lot of things. I mean, the fact that, I mean, like Switzerland, I mean, that we've been militarily involved, and you could say that we fought in Switzerland, that, I mean, bombers during World War II accidentally bombed Switzerland. I mean, it wasn't like we were deliberately trying to launch an attack on Switzerland, but you know, from 30,000 feet at night, you know, Germany and Switzerland can look pretty similar, and so there were incidents, and there were some Swiss casualties, and so, I mean, that's one example. I mean, that's surprising. Norway is another one. I mean, Norway, of course, is a close NATO ally, and you say, okay, we've never invaded Norway. Well, actually, Americans have fought in Norway. I mean, Major William Colby, who later became the head of the CIA, was an OSS officer who was paratrooped into Norway when it was occupied by the Germans in World War II, and he ended up fighting, blowing up bridges, and doing sabotage in Nazi-occupied Norway. So we actually have fought in places like Norway.
I mentioned at the very, very beginning of the hour that we have had military action in China, in Russia. There were American troops in Russia in the red-white fighting that went on after the initial Russian Revolution that led ultimately to the Bolshevik Revolution. Now, China, we could go in a number of different directions, but I want to get in here the history of John Birch, for whom the society is named, because he comes up in the book here.
Yeah, we did mention him. And China, we've been involved with, going back to the Boxer Rebellion, a number of countries, including Americans, sent troops. I mean, the Italians had troops as well, as a matter of fact. China, there's been involvement with, and then John Birch was an American soldier who was killed by the communists during the fighting between Mao and the nationalists, and he became kind of a martyr for the right, and of course the John Birch Society was named in honor of him, but he was a soldier, American soldier who was killed by the communists in China.
You mentioned surprises like finding out that we'd accidentally dropped bombs on Switzerland. I mean, is there any one event of all the ones that you studied up on and to put in the book that caused you to sigh and roll your eyes more than any other?
You mentioned Russia. I mean, a lot of people are not aware that we fought in Russia, but we did. I mean, we also reproduced in the book a photograph from Troy, Michigan, called the Polar Bear Memorial, because it was called the Polar Bear Expedition. A lot of them were from Michigan. They trained at Fort Kalamazoo in Michigan. And these were American soldiers that fought in Russia in places like Archangel in 1918 and 19, intervening during at the close end of the World War I into what was basically a Russian civil war between the whites and the reds. And we actually put American troops under the command of a British commander. And I mean, Churchill said that the idea was to strangle the Bolshevik baby in its cradle, which, if that was the goal, it didn't quite work out that way. But because, of course, you know, the Bolsheviks prevailed in that fight, and we ultimately withdrew.
Are there some lessons you'd like our country to learn from the book America Invades?
I think there are. I mean, a lot of people talk about, you know, the expense of the military, and I mean, you alluded to that earlier. I mean, that the military has been tremendously is tremendously expensive, but at the same time, I think that here we are in 2016, we're just 1 year after the conclusion, the 70th anniversary of the end of World War II. And, you know, Europe, as I mentioned, has been a very violent continent for many, many centuries. But in the last 7 years, there has, with the exception of the breakup of Yugoslavia, the former Yugoslavia, there has been general peace in Europe. And I think that part of that, the reason for that, has been American military involvement. Have mistakes been made? Sure, there have. There have been tragedies. You know, there's been our share of that too. But at the same time, things like, I mean, D-Day and the liberation of the camps in World War II, the concentration camps, were, you know, shining hours in our military history. And that the world would be much darker had we not participated in those invasions. And the military involvement that's followed afterwards has, to some extent, I think, helped to buy a peace, and ultimately, that peace is that paying for the military to maintain peace is a lot cheaper than paying for war.
Well, we certainly learn a lot in the book. It's called America Invades, How We've Invaded or Been Militarily Involved with Almost Every Country on Earth. Christopher Kelly is the principal author with Stuart Laycock. Christopher, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.